Diversity.
Years of course confusion.
I'll crash his world.
Well, hello everyone. Another office hours, or another one-off special stream. I did an emergency stream at 1 a.m. last night, and the fallout has been so spectacular that I had to do this follow-up. If you haven't seen the earlier stream, I'd recommend it, because there was quite a lot of stuff I got into there, number of different monologues I went on, and of course the footage itself is extraordinary. I'm not going to be replaying that on this show. Here I'm going to be focusing on the fallout and some of the absolutely hysterical, and I mean that in both senses of the word, i.e. it has been hysterical, but also tremendously funny, since that has happened. Also, interestingly, a bit of a kind of news update. Zelensky, directly after the meeting, he went and did this interview with Fox News, where he appeared to double down on all of his positions, and then immediately got on a plane and flew to London. So as we speak, Zelensky, in the same bloody tracksuit that he wore to the White House, has gone to 10 Downing Street to meet with Keir Starmer. You couldn't make it up. He has gone immediately to London to talk to Starmer. And of course, Starmer spoke to Trump just 2 days ago on Thursday. What Zelensky and Starmer are going to say, I don't know. But what is extraordinary here is that all of the Western leaders who aren't America, led by Britain and France and Germany, Merz is the new chancellor there, seem to be doubling and tripling down. They seem to be saying that they're going to back Zelensky 110% and they're going to keep this going. And as we'll see on this show, Prime Minister of Australia came out and said that. It seems like Canada are going to follow suit. So they're actually insane enough to try to keep on. They're going to try to do the gay without America. They're going to try to do NATO and the global American empire without America. Let's see how that goes, because it is extraordinary what we're witnessing here. There we are. You can see the hysterical reaction to Trump's evisceration of Zelensky. I have sparked up another cigar. Last night I had an H. Upman Magnum 54. Today it's an H. Upman Corona Major, which is for this sort of time, early evening, sun still going down. Beautiful cigar to have at this time. You know, it's got those vanilla shortbread notes. All right, without further ado, I'm going to start off playing some videos, and then we're going to look at some tweets and things the people have made as well. Let us start with the absolute most hysterical of all of them, which is this American dude who is literally breaking down and crying because of what has happened.
This motherfucker talks about him wearing a suit. I hate this fucking country. I've never in my life felt like I do right now. This man has been respectful to every leader in the world. Everybody. And you clowns want to fucking do that shit to him when he comes over here. You fucking disgraceful son of a bitches. Man, I just want to be next to Zelensky right now. God damn, man, I can't. Sorry, y'all. I can't believe what I just witnessed in our White House.
Oh, man. I mean, we're laughing. honestly, this is where we're just getting started. All of them are like this. All of them. I watch the Rest Is Politics, Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell. They were on the verge of tears. Okay, these people are losing their minds. In a way, I mean, we were wondering when Trump won, like, where was all of this? Honestly, this Ukraine fallout, this may be the mother of all of the salt tears, friends. It is mental. Let's one of the most crazy outlets here has been a radio channel called LBC. And I'm going to have to play some of these in full because Americans who are watching this show aren't going to believe the level of Pravda that the British media has become. Okay. We do not have a free press in this country. Okay. We have got basically Pravda. Let's just watch this next one here. And I'm going to play a few from LBC because they are off the scale.
Who's the former US Naval Intelligence Officer? He's also a best-selling author. He's been to Ukraine and he's fought alongside the Ukrainian military. He joins us now. Malcolm Nance, thank you very much. I can see you on Zoom. Our listeners can't. Your expression, I wish listeners could see it. Can you tell us how you're feeling now?
Well, quite chagrined. I was listening to your program before, and Gareth from Northern Ireland, but put it quite well. We used to have presidents of the United States who respected freedom, democracy, liberty, understood the oppression that countries which engage in democracy have from dictatorships, warlords, potentates. And what you saw today, for your listening audience, my look of absolute shock, what you saw today was the single most disgraceful display of any president of the United States in American history, bar none. We all know presidents have tough conversations behind the closed doors. Lyndon B. Johnson during the civil rights era, FDR and Churchill early in World War II. There's always some measure of diplomacy towards a common goal. Not here, because the United States under Donald Trump, right? Not as president, right? As the occupant of the seat in the Oval Office, is shilling for Moscow. And why he thought he would bring Zelensky in and attempt to humiliate him after he had already received an agreement, which would help repay, offset some of the costs, which the United States to this point has never done. We have never asked for people fighting for freedom to repay us. I mean,
Marshall Plan, anyone? Bloody all the money that Britain had to pay after World War II, huh? The original Boom of Truth? This guy doesn't know his history. It was only Stalin who didn't have to pay back. Anyway, let's carry on.
If that's the case, the United States owes $500 billion to NATO for Afghanistan. But what you're looking at here is a petty dictator wannabe trying to act tough, talking in Twitter, internet memes to satisfy Vladimir Putin and Elon Musk. Utterly disgraceful.
And if anyone disrespected the Oval Office, I would contend it was Donald Trump.
See, listen to the, like, there's no pushback, right? That was hysterical by anybody's standards. That wasn't just biased analysis. It was hysterical analysis. And her opening gambit is to team up for more, to agree with him. There is no, I mean, in this country, we're meant to have something called Ofcom, impartiality of media. But all that means is that they persecute conservatives, they persecute anybody who speaks out against the regime. This shit is allowed to go 24/7, right? Every single hour of the day, you're allowed to have an interview like this where the interviewer and the interviewee are completely on 100% the same page, which also happens to be the same page as the current sitting government.
It was not
Oh.
President Zelensky. The way he treated his guest who had, I mean, look, we assume President Zelensky flew, but the airspace is closed. He might well have spent 14 hours on a train to Warsaw and then taken a long flight to the United States. And to have that kind of treatment meted out to him by the vice president and the president in that bullying way, as you say, we have never seen the like. Where does it go from here?
Well, I mean, you know, President Zelensky, I thought, handled it well. And if I can correct you.
Oh, yeah, he handled it well. Yeah, only the worst diplomatic performance that we've ever seen in our lives, completely costing his country, you know, a deal that they really needed to make, and destroying his reputation in America, you know, destroying a very important strategic relationship for him and his people. But no, actually, Zelensky handled it well. Oh, yeah, brilliant. Great analysis. Great analysis, Malcolm. You know, Nance is the right word.
Or let me rephrase that. If I can assist your audience in understanding who the leader of the free world is right now, it's Vladimir Zelensky. It is not Donald Trump.
Zelensky is the leader of the free world. Zelensky is the rat king, far from just having ended his career, is actually the leader of the free world. Mini Churchill now. Leader of the free world. Brilliant.
Donald Trump does not believe in democracy. Donald Trump does not believe in the values that the American Revolution were founded on. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, right? And all the values that made us a constitutional republic. He doesn't respect you as a constitutional, parliamentarian system, or your monarchy, or the Commonwealth. And this is where we have trouble. You know, these people out there are acting as if they are living their lives in an alternate reality on Twitter, because nothing Trump and Vance said about Ukraine was true. None of it. Ukraine is not destroyed from end to end. It takes 18 hours to drive across Ukraine. And if you do it like I've done many times, the war is in the last 30 to 45 minutes in a limited part of the southeast of Ukraine. Will you hear air raid sirens? Yes, you will. But you will see a country that is completely functional. No war, nothing being destroyed. Okay. Are they conscripting soldiers? Yes, because they're at war with...
Don't forget now, right? These people, these fuckers, caught us. The sort of things sensible, centered videos I make on this channel, and the kind of rational analysis I offer on a daily and weekly basis. They call us extremists. These people, these are meant to be the adults in the room, and people like me are meant to be quote unquote extremists, right? They are utterly out of their tree. Okay. And the thing is, all of these nonsense things he's listing off, that my values, my freedom, my democracy, and so on. The actual reality, as I keep on trying to impress on all of you, is that Russia have won the war. Russia have won the war, okay? They did it with blood and steel, the old-fashioned way. This brute fact is the thing that none of these people are coming to terms with, because they have pumped themselves so full of this propaganda, they've actually started to believe their own bullshit. Boris Johnson just a week ago was still saying that Ukraine could win the war. The Tory boys on Twitter still think that Ukraine can win the war.
Russia.
Okay.
These people are unfired from reality, really.
I know. Emotions are definitely running high. I just want to ask you... Mm. You said I agree, President Zelensky, he has nothing to be ashamed of in that meeting. His White House hosts do. However, he still needs the US. He still needs the security guarantees. Can President Zelensky ever come back and sign a deal after what happened today?
Look, Vladimir Zelensky came from a country that was relatively corrupt before the Ukraine war, right? Everybody knows that Ukraine had a problem with corruption. The minute that war started, the Ukrainians zeroed that out. There is no... no corruption in Ukraine. Their SWAT cops are hunting for people...
There's no corruption in Ukraine.
...who are war profiteers who are trying to make money off of this.
Can you answer the question? Yes. Just on Zelensky, yes. and his standing now as a head of state, how can he bring his country into peace with this going on in the U.S.?
Well, I'm just saying, he in fact does... If Donald Trump, who is probably going to be pretty angry about this, might even cut off all security assistance based on his ego. Zelensky has Europe as his back. He doesn't necessarily...
I would just like to say, again, but this country is meant to have a media red. This woman on LBC has let this man talk unfiltered lies, unfiltered, straight up, obvious lies. He just claimed that there is zero corruption in Ukraine. Okay, with a straight face, and she's just sitting there nodding, you know, oh yeah, tell us more about what a terrible man Donald Trump is. This is the excuse we have for a media here, okay? And then they've got the audacity to have a go at my buddy Carl, who runs the Lotus Eaters. You'll never see anything even remotely this dishonest on Lotus Eaters, okay? For good or for worse, say what you want about them. They'll never straight up lie to your face like this guy.
Is it
need
time?
The United States to win this war.
Okay, well, I mean, it would be a great thing, but it's not necessarily...
She's Bojo's sister, by the way. I forgot to mention that. This is Boris Johnson's sister. Yeah, to make matters even... Like, the fucker who actually made this war happen in the first place, back in April 2022, there's no conflict of interest allowing his sister to actually be the presenter on the radio show, interviewing this former US Navy intelligence officer. Okay, when I say it's Pravda, right, this shit would have made Stalin blush, I'm telling you.
Realpolitik, if Europe was strong enough to do it on its own, it remains to be seen if that's achievable. Thank you very much indeed for your time this evening. Malcolm.
I want to stick with LBC because it is particularly insane, okay? And I want to show you that the bubble that these people live in. And you see, we were laughing at that guy at the start, that kind of hick lib, you know, typical American tough guy, hick lib, they call them. You know, he's a shit lib, but he acts tough. Or he's a, you know, he's a military NAFO bro or whatever you call them. we laugh at those people who cry, okay? And I watch quite a lot of LBC in preparation for this stream. I've just picked out the most insane bits. But there were lots of women, there were lots of men calling up saying that they wept. They cried when they saw this, that they were appalled at the behavior of the American president, that the West is dead, that, you know, they were scared about the future and all of this. Now we can laugh at those people, but you can also say, well, look, they are pumped full of this propaganda 24/7. Okay, I know people whose main source of news is, for example, the Daily Telegraph. Okay, they are a straight conduit. Okay, and I know it's difficult to admit that your family, that your loved ones, that your brother or your sister or your mother, okay, are straight up NPCs. Okay, but at some point you have to admit this fact of elite theory, that most people are just a function of their elites. That their opinions are a straight up one-to-one function of the media that they consume, right? This was well understood by the likes of Spengler and so on, who rightly mocked the quote-unquote notion of the free press, because this, what you're watching here, is a quote-unquote free press, okay? It literally is just the freedom of rich people to propagandize the peasantry. And I'm afraid your brothers and sisters and mothers and so on are just the peasantry NPCs. Anyway, let's carry on.
I have been covering politics for nigh on 20 years. As you know, I've been fortunate enough to be at the centre of British politics, behind the scenes. I've been in head-to-head meetings between the Prime Minister of Britain and countries that we'd have disagreements with and countries that we are allies with. I've seen what happens when the media leaves the room. I have never in my life heard anything remotely close to what we have just witnessed. We have just witnessed history. We have just witnessed...
What I was saying about the NPC at home, this guy that we're watching here, this presenter, right? He is barely a step above that NPC. He is a straight and direct product of the system that he's come into. He has never once questioned a single one of his liberal priors. He has never once stopped to question any of the narratives that he has fed. And as a result of that, if anybody even remotely based rings into his shitty little radio show, he'll just hang up on them. Or he'll come back with stock answers, or he'll try to make a mockery of them. Okay, everybody thinks about James O'Brien. Okay, this is the station that James O'Brien is on as well. every single one of them are as bad as James O'Brien. And it goes all the way up to Keir Starmer and Ben Wallace and Boris Johnson. And they're all the same. Fuckwits, one and all. Not a single original thought in it, any of them. That's why the Tory party, when all is said and done, still come to this channel for ideas. Because not a single one of them has ever challenged a single idea they were ever fed in their entire lives. Anyway, let's carry on.
Something that is closer to Jerry Springer over war on the European continent. Honestly, speechless. There's a press conference going to happen. I don't know. I mean, who knows whether it's going to happen later. There's a press conference between Zelensky and Trump going to happen later. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if someone's going to emerge with a black eye. Zelensky looked like he was going to cry at points during that. 0345-6060-973. It's in these moments, folks, we turn it over to what you think. I mean, you've heard the same thing. We've all been going through the consequences of a war in Ukraine, us because of rising prices, whether it's energy or otherwise. We've all seen the effects of it. Trump has come in and in a...
Rising prices because you decided our government, the government you support, the successive governments that you have supported, thought it was a great idea to put sanctions and try to cancel the country of Russia. Nice one, Einstein. Oh, now energy prices are going up. Oh, and at the same time, we're going to bring in net zero carbon. Oh, and energy prices are going up. Fucking lunatics.
Month said he's going to do a deal to end the war. What do you think? What do you think? Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent. Simon, what do you think? What do you think?
I think it was a mugging. I think it was a mugging, Tom, and I think it was entirely premeditated. I think that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance knew exactly what they were going to do the moment that they brought President Zelensky into the Oval Office.
This is about the first true thing that anybody said, by the way. That's probably correct from Simon Marks there. I don't think he says anything else sensible, but that is one sensible thing he did say. I think it was somewhat planned as well, as I said on the last stream.
This is Donald Trump's thank you to the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, who yesterday went out of his way to flatter Donald Trump, invite him to make a state visit to the UK, secure the Prime Minister's approval of President Trump's efforts to try and end the war in Ukraine. And I suspect that they were fully aware yesterday during that meeting with the Prime Minister of what they were going to engage in today with the Ukrainian leader.
Listening to Simon Marks' voice has reminded me about how much I hate media creatures. Okay. I've been around a while, so I've got to meet lots of different people now. In real life, I've met various media, quote-unquote media personalities. Not social media, I'm talking about old-fashioned media. One of the things that they've all got in common, and his voice, this Simon Marks's voice, has got this quality about it, is a kind of unlimited shallowness. It's a deep shallowness whereby their understanding of all things is very surface level. And never rises above the level of a media narrative or a newspaper headline. And I'm talking about in person. Okay. Now, if there's one thing I am, friends, that is, I guess you'd call me an intellectual, somebody who's written books, somebody who thinks deeply about ideas, somebody who picks ideas apart, somebody who tries to think, you know, at a foundational level to pick things apart. And in my experience, these sorts of media characters, like these ones that we're watching here, are just not capable of doing it. Okay, that's why they became journalists. They didn't become journalists because they had this passion for the truth or you're bringing down Nixon or whatever. I mean, maybe there's some kind of cartoon Superman meme version of that in their background. They generally become these figures because they're shallow. Because they want attention, because they like the idea of being recognized, because they like the idea of having their name up there in lights or whatever. And I have always had a deep dislike of this sort of kind of media figure, especially because they end up often crowding out actual intellectuals in the kind of quote unquote discourse. I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about all intellectuals, from Mia Shimer to anybody who writes like proper books from an academic background, tend to have their voices drowned out by the likes of this dude here. So it's kind of something I've always disliked. And when I've met these people in person, I've always thought your kind of coverage is, I said it when I was talking about Dark Synth. It's like 2 miles wide or 100 miles wide, but like an inch thick. They've got very little depth to anything. And it kind of drives me up the wall a little bit. Anyway, let's carry on.
The most courageous figure Europe has seen since 1945, they engaged in a premeditated geostrategic mugging of the Ukrainian president over that 45-minute brutal photo opportunity that Donald Trump deliberately put Zelensky through. And you heard him there at one point saying, this is why I let this thing run so long. And it's clear that this was premeditated. This is going to boost Zelensky's standing in Ukraine dramatically. The Russians, and let me just tell you parenthetically, the Russian news agency TASS, a Putin propaganda outfit, was allowed into the Oval Office, but not Reuters or the Associated Press. This is manna from heaven for Vladimir Putin, and it is a massive, massive political problem for Sir Keir Starmer, Lord Peter Mandelson, Number 10, and Emmanuel Macron, of course, who was here on Monday.
And most directly, Ukraine. I mean, there's Trump saying, make a deal or we're out, is a threat that Ukraine cannot do anything but acquiesce to. And so in a sense, Simon, I'm actually, in a way, really pleased we all got to hear and see that. Because, I mean, there it is. It is authentically angry. That meeting, were it to have happened behind closed doors, obviously would never have been shown, but the readout would have, I think, reflected some of the anger there. But we have all now seen the American president and his sort of vice president kind of bully, almost. You know, the kind of the kid next to you in the playground who goes and starts the fight on your behalf.
Absolutely. But also playing to Trump's face.
Try and take down Zelensky in a press conference.
Totally. But also playing to Trump's face and saying, Donald Trump, that he was really glad the American people were getting a chance to see this, and continuing to accuse President Zelensky, as J.D. Vance disgracefully did there, of not having thanked...
Think about this guy on the left here who internalizes the dilemmas of Keir Starmer. Let's not forget, Keir Starmer's got a 14% approval rating, okay? But this guy on the left, he's feeling all of the emotion. What a dilemma for Keir Starmer. And oh my God, I can't believe it. How dare the American president behave in this way? I honestly hate these people. I mean, if there's anybody who's the enemy, it's these fuckers here.
To the United States for its assistance. Zelensky has constantly thanked the United States and the American people for the assistance they have provided him. But this is surely now the moment that the transatlantic alliance ends. I mean, all the talk yesterday, which was, specious at best, about the special relationship between the US and the UK, that is now absolutely consigned on the ash heap of bilateral cliches. There is no coming back from this for the UK, for France, for Germany, for NATO members across the board. This is the inflection point that Donald Trump absolutely planned. And it was so obviously premeditated. This wasn't a conversation that was going off the rails. This was a conversation that Donald Trump deliberately kept going, snaring Zelensky in to a trap that he and the Vice President of the United States, J.D. Vance, unleashed. And, this is Donald Trump doing Putin's dirty work for Putin. There's no...
Who has this accent? you remember that show, like in the 80s, you know, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous? You know, who has this accent that Simon Marx has? Like, this is not a real person. But anyway, let's carry on.
Question about that. Now, they were supposed to leave that room and go and sign the minerals deal. It's hard to imagine that Volodymyr Zelensky is going to sign anything after that. Then they're supposed to have lunch together, can you imagine?
I know.
And then a joint press conference. I mean, if you're Volodymyr Zelensky, the presumably the most sensible course now is just to leave the building. But
I don't know,
I can't imagine what's going to happen next.
What is the president of Ukraine meant to do if the president of the United States has said, if you don't sign this deal, militarily, we're out and you're on your own? The Europeans, we can't make enough bullets to go and help the Ukrainians. We need the
Thankfully, somebody is actually, fair play to the pillock on the left here, he's actually, this is the first bit of realism we've had in, 20-odd minutes now of watching these fuckwits. This is the first bit of reality that's reared its head. Oh, actually, we can't make enough bullets. We don't even have an army. So what the hell are you people talking about?
Americans too, to give us the cover that we are helping Ukraine in pushing back Russian troops. If the American president says, if he follows through on it, Zelensky has no option. He's being bullied into sign a deal, and he's being bullied in front of the cameras.
Yeah, but that is why Zelensky is now going to need massive amounts of geopolitical European assistance, and it's going to require...
Oh, here we go. Let's just double and triple down. And, you know, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and over and over again and expecting a different outcome. This is what I felt like watching Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell last night. It was like watching two fucking retards, two flids, two spastics, okay, trying to put like a square peg into a round hole for an hour. Oh yeah, okay, but we have to keep on trying. We're going to go back. What's our plan? Oh, we're just going to do the same thing again. We're going to go back to the same narrative again, and we're just going to keep on quintupling down, sextupling down, expecting a different outcome. Face the fact: Russia have won. Trump is taking America onto a different course. It is over, guys. So wake the fuck up, maybe. But no, they just keep on doubling and tripling down.
European leaders to start drawing a line in the sand here for the United States and the American government, rather than, as we saw Macron do on Monday and the Prime Minister do yesterday, coming here and thinking that you can flatter your way towards some kind of an agreement on security guarantees in Ukraine. Now, I think it's possible that eventually that deal on rare earths minerals gets signed. I'm just wondering whether Zelensky, after that pasting that he took there, and every effort that he made politely to try and steer the conversation back to some semblance of normal, was absolutely torpedoed. I mean, you know, Donald Trump at times was holding him down, and J.D. Vance was brandishing the shiv, and then other times they switched around. I've never seen anything like it.
Simon, really appreciate it. As always, thank you for being there for us. Simon Marx, LBC Washington correspondent. Folks, there is more to come. As Simon pointed out, the meeting is happening.
I just
want to
point out that during that little exchange there, Simon Marx actually claimed that Zelensky was the most courageous figure that Europe had seen since 1945. He actually said that with a straight face. Well, I assume his face was straight. We have to get over rule by midwits of this sort. It has to. I mean, if this is not the moment that it's over, it's coming. I'm telling you, it's coming. But anyway, like I said, all of the world leaders are doubling and tripling down. Here is the Prime Minister of Australia. Let's take a little watch of this. I've taken him, but you can bet your bottom dollar that every one of the other NATO leaders is going to be making a speech like this, in the next day or so. Macron and Starmer and Mertz and all these guys, they're committed to this course of trying to keep it going.
We stand with Ukraine. I've had meetings with President Zelensky on multiple occasions, including, of course, in Kyiv, in Ukraine, where I travelled very early on in my prime ministry.
Can we try to end this farce? Okay, what does it mean for the Prime Minister of Australia, a country that is at least semi-vassal to China at this moment, okay, and is wholly vassal to America and the American Empire, which has no real power whatsoever? What the fuck does it mean for him to stand up there and say, oh, Australia stands with Ukraine? Okay, a little bit of realism, please. It means absolutely nothing for Australia to be standing with Zelensky. This is just words. And at some point, we're going to have to come to the realization that guns and steel and butter, as somebody once famously said, are going to trump words 10 times out of 10. We're coming into a moment now where politics is going to be done in a different way. So all of this boomer bullshit that they're still slinging here, what to what end? What do they hope to achieve? It's over, guys. Wake up.
And this year, we've seen that land war in Europe go on for 3 years. The people of Ukraine are fighting not just for their own national sovereignty. They are fighting for the international rule of law. Australia has committed...
Yeah, the international rule of law that doesn't fucking exist, that was always a figment of your imagination, that only you twats ever abided by. The full force of the international law. There's no such thing. You were whose army, mate? And that's ultimately what it's going to boil down to, 10 times out of 10. You and whose army?
Some $1.5 billion to help Ukraine defend itself. More than $1.3 billion of that is military support. We will continue to stand with...
Think about this now. You're in Australia. My old mate, Chris Gard, if you're watching, mate, hello, long time no see. And Marcus and various other people I know in Australia. Think now, $5.6 billion of their money has gone for this project. They're literally thousands of miles away in Australia, and they're supporting this project. For what? For what? If I was Australian, I'd be thinking, how can I save my country from being totally dominated by China? It's a bit of a problem that our entire industry is predicated on selling raw materials to make manufacturers in China. You know, the Chinese steel industry, I made a video a good couple of years ago, got hundreds of thousands of views, showing how Australia is basically, you know, China have ultimate leverage over them. China could crash the Australian economy with a click of their fingers if they wanted to. It's a very precarious position. But instead of worrying about that, their prime minister is sending $5.6 billion to Ukraine. And worrying about guilt over the bloody Aborigines. Couldn't even invent the wheel.
Long as it takes, because this is the struggle of a democratic nation versus an authoritarian regime led by Vladimir Putin, who clearly has imperialistic designs, not just on Ukraine, but throughout that region.
Do you have any concerns about Ukraine's ability to fight on or secure a just ceasefire without US support?
Well, we, of course, want to see peace in Ukraine, and that's what the Ukrainian people want as well. But I tell you how you get peace in Ukraine really quickly, which is to Russia stopping its illegal and immoral invasion, and Russia stopping the attacks on civilians.
This is the definition of magical thinking. Okay. Oh, I'll tell you what's going to stop the war in Ukraine. It's if Russia magically decide to wake up one day and be like, oh, this is wrong, guys. We changed our mind now. Putin's like, oh, yeah, I've got a pang of guilt. And I didn't mean to do it, lads. I mean, what the fuck is this? He might as well not talk. He'd be better off just saying nothing than coming out with this bollocks.
Civil infrastructure engaging in this act of aggression that they have engaged in now for 3 years. And of course, in the past, in the very recent past as well, the attack that they had on Crimea.
The exchange between Donald Trump and President Zelensky was quite extraordinary. Did you expect Donald Trump
Sorry, I was muted. I want you to look into the eyes of this boomer here, okay? His boomer, stupid boomer eyes. We cannot move forward until the way of thinking that this fuckwit here and all of the other people who think like him are gone, okay? And gatekept out of ever being in power again. What is the point of this? What is the point of moral fagging about, what's happened in Russia from the point of view of being Australian Prime Minister? How about just wake the fuck up and deal with the problems in your own country, first and foremost? And it's not like Australia doesn't have problems, like I talked about. What is this? It is Harry Potter. You know, there are three narratives that exist for these people. One of them is World War II, where you're always Churchill and you're always fighting Hitler. One of them is Harry Potter, where you're Harry Potter and you're always fighting Voldemort. And a third one is Star Wars, where you're the Rebel Alliance and you're fighting against Palpatine. Those are the three narratives these people have got, which are all variations on the same narrative. It needs to die. It absolutely needs to die. It's not going to go away until people stop voting for people like this. I mean, people just don't tolerate people like this being in power.
To behave like that in that meeting?
Well, I am responsible for Australia's foreign policy. Australia's foreign policy is determined by Australia. And we stand unequivocally with Ukraine in their struggle because we regard that as a struggle for the upholding of international
Think war. About how empty this is. Imagine you've had your brother killed by the Russians. You've had your house blown up, right? Maybe you've got a sister who's in hospital because a bomb was dropped on her leg, right? You've just watched that shit show in the White House with Zelensky. And now this fucker comes on TV. Oh, Australia. Ah, good day, mates. Australia stands with Ukraine on this day. Like, are you going to feel reassured if you're Ukrainian? Because they're not actually going to do anything, are they? It's like playing Civilization and you're completely the other side of the map. And they have that big vote. Oh, we all need to take aggression against, against Gandhi or against, the Zulus or something. We're all up for it. And then you don't send anybody. Don't send a single soldier. Don't send a single military unit. Nothing. Oh, good luck. But we stand with you. We're 100% with you. This is like just hot air at the end of the day. So what's the point of it? It needs to be backed up by something real.
See a US president acting in that way with another world leader, surely that changes the game for any other world leaders who are looking to interact with him when you see this unprecedented sort of behaviour.
What we'll do is determine Australia's position. And Australia stands with Ukraine. And there are many, of course, in the Ukrainian community here as well that I've engaged with for a long period of time now. They're going through, including people who have fled the conflict. The people of Ukraine have suffered greatly in defence of their nation and their national sovereignty. And Russia has acted like a bully, a big country seeking to invade and to take over territory from another sovereign nation.
But let's just go back to what he said, okay? Okay, let's pretend that everything he's saying is right. Russia is the big bully in the schoolyard, okay? What he is doing and what the other European leaders are doing and Canada and a couple of other nations are doing when it comes to this conflict, it's like there's a kid getting the shit kicked out of them in the schoolyard, okay? Now, you know, and I know from having been school kids, the only way to sort that out is for a few of you to come together. And at some point, you have to kick the shit out of the bully. OK, no other solution is going to work. You need to take that bully out and to bully the bully. OK, that is the only solution. What these guys are doing is they're holding like a mother's meeting. They're holding like, oh, let's have a, let's sit around and discuss the bullying problem. Oh, what are we going to do? Oh, I tell you, we might let's write a letter to the bully's parents. That's going to sort the problem out. I mean, it's all bullshit. That's not going to solve the problem unless they're going to actually get together and send an army to defeat Putin, right? This is all bollocks, especially because, as I keep on reiterating, Russia has won. And I'm using the Australian Prime Minister because I thought it was particularly farcical that Australia have these views, being right across the other side of the world, completely in a different sphere of influence, miles away. Because they might as well be away with the fairies. That's how far away they are. And all of our leadership is away with the fairies. Realism will return. Trump and Putin are taking the world by the scruff of the neck, and they're saying realism's going to come back. And if you want to do something about it, you have to bully the bully. Until then, we're going to carry on flushing your head down the toilet.
In this case, Ukraine. And like the rest of overwhelmingly countries around the world, we have stood with Ukraine and we will continue to do so.
You mentioned that term bully. Like, from my perspective, watching that interaction, J.D. Vance and Donald Trump felt like they were almost bullying or pressuring Zelensky. As the leader of the country, you see that interaction. Does it change the way that you might go about interacting with the President of the US?
What we will do is always stand up for Australia's national interest, and Australia has an interest in the international rule of law being upheld, and that is what the people of Ukraine are fighting for. Thanks very much.
I wonder if a single person in Ukraine is fighting for the quote-unquote international rule of law. Could have fooled me. I wonder if the average Azov battalion member is fighting for the international rules-based order, which this guy just talked about. Anyway, let's continue. There's one more video I'm going to play, and then we're going to have a look at some hilarious Twitter action as well.
Donald Trump declared glibly, "That makes great television." He was, of course, right. Compelling roadkill television, especially for the Kremlin. But for the Ukrainian people, this is not entertainment, it is existential. In the Oval Office, the crumpled face of the Ukrainian ambassador, buried in her hands, close to tears, said it all. Trump, with the help of Vance, had set Zelensky a trap, and proud and bruised as he is, Zelensky walked right into it. Pride was not swallowed. Zelensky is not as cautious as Starmer, or as charming and tactile as Macron. Trump accused him of gambling with World War III when it is Putin who's been rattling the nuclear sabres. It is outrageous as Trump's insistence in the good old days of 2017 that his inauguration crowd was bigger than Obama's, when it blatantly, clearly, obviously wasn't. Trump is both a bully and a fantasist, but he's also very sincere about wanting a ceasefire deal in Ukraine because it'll make him look good. This morning we ask, what now? Where does the fight leave Prime Minister Starmer after his
Think about what they just said there, right? Trump is a bully and a fantasist, okay? Think about the shit that we've been listening to just now, okay? Trump is the fantasist. Trump is the fantasist. Trump has clearly had a look at the facts on the ground. He knows Russia has won the war. He knows that there's nothing, like, all it's going to do if they carry on, if they make the war carry on, is an endless black hole of American funds, which they don't even know where most of the money has gone. By the way, of all the billions that have been sent over there, you know it's a massive gravy train. You know there's corruption up the gills. Half of it's gone up Zelensky's nose, which is why he was probably so terrible in that meeting, because if you ask me, he was probably high. But yeah, Trump is the fantasist. He's the one returning realism to the world. Okay, and Putin, you say what you want about him. You could love him, you can hate him. He has not bullshitted. Since this war started, he's like, I am not bluffing. I'm not fucking around. Okay, this is Russia, and Russia is back. It's all of these people who have continued to wallow in their delusions. They're like it's like a kind of ostrich committee where every single person's got their head in the sand And it's like, how are we going to get out of this? Oh, I know. We're going to bury our heads a little bit further into the sand. That should work. Okay. Oh, I haven't quite got all of my neck in. Okay. I need a little bit deeper into the sand because that'll get us out of this mess. We deserve, every nation deserves a proper government, not all of these delusional lunatics that we are ruled by at the moment.
Moosefest with the very same man 24 hours earlier. Where does it leave Europe as leaders prepare to meet the Ukrainian president in London tomorrow and circle the wagons? Let's just dip into some of the dust up again. And it is, of course, still painful listening.
We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Oh, painful. Absolutely painful. Oh, when I listened to it, it was like a dagger through my heart.
You're in no position to dictate that. That's remember exactly this. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good.
You will feel influenced.
We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influenced.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and it happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards. Playing
cards. Right now, you don't have your playing cards. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III.
What can one say? I think that if Zelensky had been in the Oval Office with a translator, although his English is perfectly good, although it was disintegrating slightly in that exchange, had there been a translator, then the steam, the heat would have been taken out of it. We might be in a very different place today. But I think what it shows is there is real bad blood between Zelensky and Trump. We'll get into that in a minute. And the big question, of course, is whether this relationship can be repaired at all. My first two guests this morning on this extraordinary subject are Lionel Barber, former editor of the Financial Times, now author and broadcaster and podcaster, co-host of the Media Confidential podcast, and Lord Peter Ricketts, former permanent representative to NATO and permanent secretary for the Foreign Office under Blair and Brown. Good morning to both of you. Do you think, Lord Ricketts, that this might have been a trap set for Zelensky that he fell right into?
Hello, Matt.
Now, unbelievably, I have met one of these two people who are about to speak. I won't say which one I've met, but I've actually... yes. Anyway, let's carry on.
Well, I don't know. In a sense, it doesn't matter because the outcome is what we've all seen. For what it's worth, my instinct is that Trump wanted this to be a success. Mm. He likes success. He likes to come out of a meeting with a deal. There was a big, shiny deal ready to be signed on minerals. And his lead-in remarks as they sat down were quite respectful. He talked about the courage of the Ukrainian people and the courage of Zelensky. And there seemed to be a bit of an effort to go through the same rigmarole as had been gone through with Macron and Starmer, some respectful exchanges, almost like an old Chinese emperor sitting in his palace. People come across from distant lands bringing tributes and gifts, and the emperor bestows his goodwill. And I think if Zelensky had responded in the same register, with a lot of thanks and a lot of politeness and not engaging with the barbs, then it would have moved on to a signing ceremony and they'd have come out with a deal. So no, I'm not sure it was a pre-planned. I think it was
Spoken like a true diplomat, by the way. There's somebody who spent many, many years glad-handing and knowing how to speak. Let's face it, it was a diplomatic disaster for Zelensky. Because I kind of agree. I think Trump was gearing up to sign this minerals deal. And I do think that there was a trap laid. I actually agree with the analysis that Vance and Trump went in there looking to rile him up. Zelensky was just stupid, though, right? He shouldn't have risen to the bait. And he shouldn't have stuck half a bloody bag of coke up his nose before he went in.
A road accident rather than a setup.
Lionel Barber, the one thing that Trump really wants is that ceasefire deal. He wants a signing ceremony on the South Lawn of the White House, the way that Clinton did with Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin. And even though that ended in disaster, you know, and assassination and death, that was the moment that people remember. He wants something very similar. And what I saw in his face yesterday was the frustration that that moment was being denied him by the Ukrainian president.
Well, Matt, there is a difference between a ceasefire and a durable peace settlement.
Absolutely.
And what we're seeing at the moment is Trump is all in on just getting a truce, a ceasefire.
Now, can we have more truth told here? Okay. It's obvious that Starmer, Macron, Zelensky, that twat from Australia we were just watching, and the NATO head, Mark Rutger, and all of these other horrible globalists, they want to keep the war going. Zelensky wants to keep the war going. Zelensky doesn't want peace, right? They want to carry on the war. And that is the elephant in the room. They are not being honest about wanting peace. That's why they keep on scuppering it. That's why Boris Johnson was still talking about Ukraine winning just a week ago. That's why Boris Johnson scuppered the peace deal in April 2022, before a lot of the bloodshed happened. That's why they're at war in the first place. Let's not forget, in the very early days of the war, Putin took a little brigade down to Kiev, and he was hoping that Zelensky would just cack himself and be like, right, we're going to cave to your demands now, and all of this bullshit stops. That didn't happen. What Zelensky did is he led his country into a war with a much superior power that he was only ever going to lose, egged on by Joe Biden, Boris Johnson, and all of the other fuckwits who were in office. Okay, the blood is on their hands. The threat of World War III is on their hands. Okay, they were talking about, oh, the threat of nuclear war. The reason why nuclear war keeps on being threatened is because successive British prime ministers keep on basically tough talking against the Russian president when they haven't got a leg to stand on. We've got more admirals than gunboats. Hello? It's not 1890? And now you're surprised when Putin says, excuse me, I've got nukes, by the way, and London's not that far away, you twats. But no, let's keep it going. Oh, I honestly, there's that horrible shitlib channel called Led by Donkeys. Have you heard of that? We are actually led by donkeys. We are led by the worst of us. And they are, I mean, not only are they embarking on this absolutely delusional foreign policy, let's not forget they're doing it at the same time as running each and every one of these countries into the ground, deindustrializing, net zero carbon bullshit, unlimited immigration, okay, economies falling apart, and also we're going to give billions to this doomed project in Eastern Europe. How about wake the fuck up, the lot of you?
The hard work is all around what comes next, in particularly any security guarantees that Zelensky and certainly the Prime Minister...
So I want to apologise to donkeys, okay? The donkeys have had a long, glorious history of, you know, carrying packs of cargo and carrying Jesus and stuff like that. Sorry to donkeys everywhere. I'm reminded of my dad. My dad always used to say when I was a kid, I always used to leave the door open in the house when it was cold or whatever. And he used to say, a donkey would have learnt by now. So even he gave respect to donkeys. Let's carry on.
And Macron in France and Germany and Poland, they're all looking for an answer to the security problem. And that means, certainly in the British view, a backstop. I.e., without America, without America's military power, if not boots on the ground, that's got to be key to the settlement, particularly as NATO membership is off the agenda. So the headline may well be, and it may be a good look, a kind of good for TV moment when Mr. Trump goes to Moscow on May 9th, for example, and stands next to Putin and says, we've got a ceasefire. But that doesn't mean anything without a settlement.
But I wonder if Trump cares about that. I mean, he is very much the man of the moment. He's got geopolitical ADHD. He's quite narcissistic. And it's all about him. And it's all about, you know, the cessation of fighting, as you say. But he doesn't really care what happens in 2 or 3 years down the line.
Well, Trump, and I've interviewed Trump in the Oval Office. I've been there where Zelensky was. And it is all about theatre. It's about the moment. And I think Peter is right. This was set up initially as a chance to get...
But you see, why is it all about theatre? Why is it all about television? Okay. Again, we'll go back to Scott Adams and persuasion. Okay. It's not just art of the deal. It's a persuasion thing. And I'll go back to Vince McMahon. Okay. A friend of Donald Trump's and what Vince McMahon innovated in pro wrestling. Okay. He talked about the WrestleMania moment, the postcard moment. Okay. Vince McMahon always thought in terms of the visual, where you can picture the great moment in wrestling history, whether it is, you know, Hogan dropping the leg on the Iron Sheik, Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan nose to nose, the showdown between Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan, or years later when it was Hulk Hogan and The Rock at WrestleMania 17, I think it was. You think in terms of the big postcard. And those moments have cut through, okay? Cut through way beyond, okay, the little world of pro wrestling. It cuts through and it enters into the actual mainstream cultural discourse to the point where somebody who's never even watched a minute of pro wrestling can picture that postcard of Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3, okay? Politics is exactly the same. Politics is like a little bubble, and most political stories don't travel in this country beyond Westminster and in America beyond the DC bubble. They remain in the world of wonks and think tanks and sniveling journalists like these pricks that we're watching here, okay? What Donald Trump is able to do is create postcard moments on the global stage and on the national stage in American politics that cut through, so that even people who don't follow politics get the message, okay? Even people who don't watch the news will have seen that moment between Zelensky and Trump, with him shouting, "You're going to start World War III," okay? And that shit cuts through. This is genius level persuasion from Trump, learnt, in my opinion, from Vince McMahon and the world of pro wrestling. And also from being on The Apprentice, let's not forget, for as many years as he was. Okay. These guys want to say, like, oh, well, it's all about television and theater. I'm saying this is very effective cut through politics, which all of the other politicians would give their bottom dollar to learn how to do that. Of our politicians, Boris Johnson was pretty good at cut through as well, with his linguistic phrases and so on, but not as kind of God tier as Trump is. When it comes to that skill, for better or for worse.
To sign the deal, by the way, of still a one-sided deal in favor of America, extracting minerals from Ukraine in return for the financial package and the money that it's put in. But again, there's a big picture. You can't just be doing diplomacy at this level, trying to end a war without thinking about the peace and managing the peace.
Indeed. Peter, I mean, the deal that was on the table, as far as we know, in terms of security.
Well, the truth is, in my view, is that Trump doesn't care about the peace. Trump is just going to give Putin what he wants. I genuinely believe that, because I think Trump thinks it's a lost cause and it's something that America should never have been involved with in the first place. Give it Putin. Okay, when we talk about the return, my videos for this week are about the return of the great powers. That's the Monday video. The return of the great men is the Wednesday video. And the end of the Boomer Truth regime and the World War II mindset is the Thursday video. Okay, when we talk about great powers and Mearsheimer 101, it is also the return of the sphere of influence. Okay, the sphere of influence. Trump clearly sees his sphere of influence in the West, in specifically the Americas, Canada, Greenland, Central America, South America. That should be America's ballpark to boss around, okay, as the regional power. Ukraine is a long way away from America, an ocean, not just an ocean apart, but a continent apart as well. So from Trump's point of view, it's like, well, what's it to us? Give it Russia, whatever. This is a complete different mindset shift that none of these people who've been used to dealing with the with the old paradigm, they're not able to change gears. They're not able to think in a different way because they're very wedded to the old post Cold War moment, right? The 1990s unipolar moment. They haven't woken up yet. They're starting to, though. That MI6 guy that I had I played last week, he, you know, seems like he's starting to get it. But so a lot of these people haven't woken up yet.
Security guarantees basically relied on, you know, the presence of American contractors and miners to deter the Russians from invading Ukraine again. I mean, that is a ridiculous notion when you consider that there were plenty of American businessmen and maybe not miners, but contractors in Ukraine in 2022, and it didn't exactly stop Vladimir Putin. Why would they even have thought that that was possible?
Well, because they want the mining deal and they are absolutely determined not to have the American military in anywhere near a confrontation with the Russians. And to be honest, I don't think it was ever realistic of the Brits and the French to imagine that there would be a backstop in terms of, I think it's been talked about, air power, you know, American aircraft in the air over Ukraine. Never on the cards, I don't think. The most we could hope for, maybe it's not impossible still, is some kind of intelligence.
MI6 video, people are asking from last week, is the one that is called... Putin and Trump signal the end of the post-war liberal order. As you see, it should be the last video that I put out. That is the MI6 guy that I mentioned. You should watch that.
Surveillance support from outside the country. But yeah, we're going to be in a world where there'll be no US military support to a UK French-led operation.
So under those circumstances, you know, and we've got this conference happening in London tomorrow. Should the UK and France and maybe others still insist on the idea of having troops on the ground in Ukraine? Or is that a trap that we might fall into?
Well, I mean, I think to broaden it out a bit.
I like the fact that Lord Ricketts has been more sensible than the other people that we've seen. Refreshing to see at least somebody is a bit more level-headed. And I've noticed that the people who were kind of higher ups in the regime, the MI6 guy, Lord Ricketts here, they kind of get what's happening, right? I guess more pragmatism at that level.
I think Starmer and Macron have a real opportunity tomorrow, having both seen Trump, to be at the lead of trying to get this European coalition of countries together to think seriously about how we operate in this world where we can't rely on the Americans anymore, certainly not on Ukraine. I wouldn't say that NATO is yet dead, but my goodness, we are on our own in Europe on Ukraine. So what do we do? What do we do in terms of arms supplies? Is it realistic to think about a force? In my view, the most that we could offer, I think, would be something that was in the background, support training, helping with logistics, nowhere near a ceasefire line, because as Lionel says, ceasefires can break down. Mm. And they broke down in 2014. So Zelensky knows very well that ceasefires can be very temporary. And just to go back to what we can try and achieve with Trump, I think we've got to go on trying to get into the guy's mind that if he wants to look strong, if he wants to go down in history, wants to get the Nobel Peace Prize, just doing, you know, a quick and dirty ceasefire fix with Putin that then breaks down isn't going to be any good for him in the view of history. And so,
see, this is where I think that the British establishment are still delusional. They think they can persuade Trump. Okay, you don't persuade Trump; he persuades you. He is the great man, and you're all the little. He is the Odinic man, and you're all the little men. Okay, he has already decided. Trump has been very clear on this for a long time now. He is not going to turn on this. I'm telling you, he's decided. He respects Putin. You know, you could say that's a terrible thing or whatever. He understands power. Trump does, and he's not going to turn on this, in my view. I don't really think he cares about the Nobel Peace Prize, to be honest. I mean, I think he'd love to have it as a trophy or something. But, you know, telling him, oh, if you do this, you'll win the Nobel Peace Prize is not gonna change his mind. Especially not now that they've tried to kill him and put him in jail and so on. This is not the Donald Trump of 10 years ago now. So anyway, let's carry on.
And I don't think that battle is necessarily lost, but it can't be fought by Zelensky, clearly.
Lionel, I mean, Trump changes his mind almost on a daily basis. He is capricious, he is mercurial, but we also know that there are certain constants there, you know, his vanity, his transactional nature, et cetera, et cetera. How should we, what would you say to someone like Keir Starmer? Maybe he got it right when he was there on Thursday. How does one approach Donald Trump and not get burnt?
I think he did a good job on Thursday. It looked very good for 24 hours. It essentially, he looked good. He made Trump like him. And he also, I think, delivered a subtle warning, which was, you don't want another Afghanistan on your hands.
Yeah.
So we do need to look beyond the moment. Now, I just want to add, there is some very disturbing news out of Washington late last night, referring to what Peter was saying. The American Cyber Command, under the orders of Pete Hegseth, Defense Secretary, is now apparently withdrawing a lot of the digital asset, the cyber capacity.
Yeah, Musk is going to turn SpaceX off as well. He said, and didn't he say he was going to do it on the 1st of March? It's the 1st of March today. What do they say? F around and find out.
Targeted on Russia, intelligence gathering. And if they withdraw that from Ukraine, then Ukraine is even more naked in the negotiating table than we saw yesterday, which was utterly brutal.
Yes, Starlink, I should have said, not SpaceX. Starlink is the thing he's going to turn off.
And what about Elon Musk? I mean, there was a suggestion a couple of days ago, even before the spat, that he might withdraw his Starlink capacity for Ukrainian troops. And without Starlink, they will find it very difficult to operate.
Well, that's exactly right. Because Ukraine is so dependent on military technology.
Right, so how about we shut the fuck up about this idea of Ukraine being sovereign? It's not sovereign, it's propped up, isn't it? It's not actually sovereign. It was a proxy war where NATO, under the leadership of America, was propping up a nation that had absolutely zero chance of beating Russia in a war. One of the things that Trump said to Zelensky is that without our help, that war would have been over in 2 weeks, right? And all Zelensky did was kind of hand waver and said, oh, yeah, yeah, I heard this from Putin before. But it was a raw and brutal fact. Zelensky's only there because of Biden. We know this. I can't believe they're trying to keep this bullshit going. I swear that what the European powers are trying to do is they're trying to use this crisis to accelerate a timeline where there's a unified European army or something like that. You know, they're trying to use it as a launch pad to create like the United States of Europe so that they have a seat at the table as well, something like this. And maybe they'll do it. Maybe this will be the moment where that is born. You know, but they're not going to be able to. Even in that scenario where there's a United States of Europe with a unified European army, properly funded, properly re-militarized and re-industrialized, they're not going to be able to go into that new world with all of their boomer truth, humanitarian superpower bullshit. They're going to have to get like Putin and Trump and be realist as well. Like this, all of this guff is over. It's over.
And as you say, Elon Musk, I would add, by the way, that when I saw Elon Musk in the Oval Office, he certainly wasn't wearing a suit and tie, and he was parading his son. So for that journalist, by the way, activist, Trump supporter, husband of Marjorie Greene, to be attacking Zelensky for not wearing a suit, I mean, that takes the biscuit.
Well, you know, there's so many things that take the biscuit, aren't there? Just finally, to both of you, you first, Peter. Where do you see our...
I mean, the number one person who's taking the biscuit is Zelensky, isn't he? He's like an overfed dog who's had all the biscuits. Now, you know, well, there's people who like feed dogs a sausage under the table all the time. Trump is like the one person to come along and say, like, no, I'm not giving you a sausage. You're spoiled. Stop it. Sit. Anyway, let's carry on.
Our relationship with the United States, our relationship with Europe... and indeed Ukraine, this is the future of Ukraine, by the end of this year?
Mm-hmm. Big question. Well, first of all, if I was Starmer, I think I'd drop the bridge building.
I mean, again, to go back to my dad, you know, a donkey would have learned by now. The other thing he loved saying, son, you can't have the biscuit and the bun. You're like, dad, you can actually have a biscuit and a bun. No, you can't have the biscuit and the bun. Zelensky's like the kid who wants the biscuit and the bun. It's like, oh, I'm going to take all these things and I'm going to dictate my terms on top of that. How about no?
Stuff. It's very hard to build a bridge when one side of the river is subject to earthquakes every few weeks.
Very good point.
So you know, I think, yes, he did well in anchoring a UK-US relationship. Of course, the state visit to the king was a huge ace that he could play. But I think the key task now is to pull Europe together and to get through this.
Why do they think that the king, you know, the state visit that the king is going to put on is such this ace up their sleeve? They fucking love that idea. I saw one of the videos I'm not going to play because it was a little bit too long from LBC, but I watched it out of fun. Was they had a call-in show. Should the UK rescind, should King Charles rescind the invitation to Trump now this has happened? And you got all of these like middle-aged women saying, oh, absolutely, His Majesty should definitely rescind Trump's invitation now, blah, 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 blah.
This year, a year when we will see the Americans pulling back from support for Ukraine, I'm pretty sure, and to try to, first of all, remove those barriers between the UK and the EU operating on defence, to work on this interesting coalition of countries that's meeting on Sunday, which goes beyond the EU, countries like Norway and Turkey and ourselves, as a sort of a coalition of the willing to do more to support Ukraine. And it won't be as good as having the Americans involved, but that's what we've got to do and capitalize on the fact that Merz is arriving. The new German chancellor is very much more pro-defense and pro-Ukraine. And so let's work on those and get Starmer and Macron into a kind of leadership in that role. And I think therefore shore up both the European and the American flanks of British policy, hard though that is.
Lionel, has Trump done us a favor in Europe?
He's given us a challenge. I don't think it's a favour. I agree with Peter. I mean, first of all, Starmer has to walk and chew gum at the same time. He's got to do his narrow trade deal with the United States. He's got to keep on with a decent relationship, cordial with Trump. Meanwhile, he's got to go deeper into Europe, particularly around defence. And in 1989, 1990, Europe did respond to this, to the earthquake, the fall of the Berlin Wall, with deeper economic integration, single currency, and expanding the EU eastwards. You need to have a similar strategic move by Europe, and Britain has got to be part of that. I think it is in that sense.
Why? Why does Britain have to be part of it? Anyway, let's carry on.
An opening for a Britain which decided to go Brexit 8 years ago, 9 years ago.
By the way, just a yes or no answer. Is it time to retire that phrase, the special relationship?
I would have put it in the box about 15 years ago.
Peter?
Americans have a special smile when they use that. It's never meant very much to Americans, always much more to us. It's time to bin it.
It's the crack cocaine of geopolitics for us, isn't it?
My gosh. Special relationship is over. You heard it here first. I mean, from what I can tell, and I've watched quite a lot of regime media now. I'm not going to play the Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell, but what it sounds like to me, listening to you know, the genius strategist. I mean, for the regime, their Clausewitz now is Rory Stewart. Their leading intellectual is Rory Stewart. You know. We read Machiavelli and Sun Tzu and these sorts of people, and Mearsheimer and the elite theorists. They read Rory Stewart, right? Absolute genius, tactical genius, Rory Stewart. What it seems like they are planning on doing, the globalists now, is I think they're going to try to substitute the American support with Polish and Turkish support, okay? Turkey have got quite a big army, and Erdogan, ever the opportunist, rubbing his hands, sneaking around every corner, right? You're in trouble? Well, it just so happens I got a rug to sell you, says the Turk. There he is. He's like, oh, you talked before about Turkey joining the EU. Well, we're a member of NATO. We've got a big army. Well, we might be. We don't really like the Russians that much. We've had problems with them in Syria. How about cutting us a deal? The sly Turk, Erdogan. I think genuinely they're thinking about cutting the Turks in, buddying up with the Ottomans yet again, right? Talk about the great game. The great game is back. Yeah, the Ottomans against the Russians again. Again. Right, we're back to the 19th century. Bring in the Turks. Use the Poles. Right, and then we've got the Turkish army and the Polish army, which combined, you know, it's not quite as big as the American army, but it's getting there. And I think they're genuinely thinking about going it alone without the Americans, despite Trump, in defiance of Trump, with the Turks and the Poles. Rory Stewart, with a straight face, was discussing that on his emergency stream last night. So, and I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to do it. So, oh, God, Lord help us. Talk about World War III. I think they're going to start World War III in defiance of Trump. That's the irony. What Trump was saying was true. Anyway, let's before we hit the super chats here and get out of here for the weekend, I put out this tweet saying, please post all the absolute worst salt from the Zelensky fallout here. Cringy statements from MPs, shit-nipped tears, just pictures of Rory Stewart's face. And there's the rest is politics mentioned. Here is my buddy Jonathan Wong, who's posted comments from Ursula von der Leyen. Be strong, be brave, be fearless. You are never alone, dear President Zelensky, you are. Ursula von der Leyen copy-pasted. Valdis Dombrovskis said it. Robert Mestola said it. Manfred Weber said it. Antonio Costa said it. Christoph Hansen said it. Be strong, be brave, be fearless. You are not alone. So they're doing this. They're doing this. They're carrying on. Guy Verhofstadt. This is disgrace. This bullying, this arrogance of Vance and Trump attacking the most courageous man on earth. We can be happy that Roosevelt and not Trump was American president in 1941. Otherwise, we still lived in Europe under Nazi regime. Thanks, Guy. Thanks for your input, mate. Fucking hell. By the way, that accent, it was just my made-up accent that I do all the time. I often wind up the missus and AAA with that accent. It's my generic, like, all-purpose foreign accent that I do. Norman says, here we are. Dev. Yuri Bezmenov described how the Soviets subverted the West and demoralized them into acting against their own interests. They were successful. These so-called American patriots are utterly convinced of the weakness of their own country and the righteousness of their enemies. So Dev now is basically saying that MAGA is Yuri Bezmenov. That the Russian subversion was actually MAGA. Great take, Dev. I know Dev still follows me on Twitter and so on. He's actually read my books and things, Dev, but he's one of those people who's just impervious. He's just impervious to getting through. He just sits on his liberal priors, you know, probably bouncing a troon up and down on his leg. There's old Claire Lehman, the old anal queen. Vance fucked it, probably for Twitter likes and to get Trump's attention. Asshole. Brilliant, Claire. There goes my chance to write for Quillette again. I had a column there once upon a time. Who'd have thought that Quillette would end up being such regime chills as they are? I sensed they were going in the wrong direction all those years ago. Let's carry on. this Oh dear. There's a thread by Rory Stewart. Was it for this that the US spent 80 years building power and alliances, not to be a force for good, but instead to impoverish neighbors, threaten those it protected, rob minerals from war-torn countries, and break its promises to hundreds of millions of the poorest in the world? The post-World War II order was not just about US power. It was actually Rory. I've got about 8 million books here that show that. Hans Vogel, How Europe Became American, Thomas Love Sunik, Homo Americanus, Angus Hutton, Vassal State. What other books have I got that talk about this? Tom Stevenson, Somebody Else's Empire, James Hartfield's Britain's Empires. The last section of that is all about this. How America Conquered Britain by L. Denny. Super Imperialism by Michael Hudson. Empire by Hart and Negri. Right? I mean, this is just reading, the books that I can see. Jellick, Exporting the American Model. Right? Talk about bullshit, Rory. Talk about absolute wank, Rory. Yes, it was about US power. Yeah, Mia Shimer. Where's the Mia Shimer book here that I've got? How States Think, The Rationality of Foreign Policy, right? This idea that America was this kind of benevolent nation, is actually just bollocks. America has never been any different, okay? This is one of the great lies. I'll write about this when I actually finally come to write about Boomer Truth. There'll be a chapter on all of this because this is one of the great lies of our time, but one that apparently Rory Stewart has bought hook, line, and sinker. It was about alliances, credibility, and leadership. Bretton Woods underpinned global development. The Marshall Plan rebuilt Europe, not looted it. I mean, I got questions about both of those things. And again, those books that I just mentioned tell a very different story indeed. NATO was created to defend allies, not threaten them. Right, so that's why NATO has continually expanded eastwards since 1991, is it? Why does NATO keep on expanding if it doesn't threaten them? Why, in the run-up to the February 2022 invasion by Putin, was there a build-up of troops on the Russian borders by the Ukrainians? Why were the Ukrainians building up troops? Why have Ukraine got such a massive army? Why does Russia feel threatened? Why did the war in Crimea happen? Why did the war in Georgia happen? What's going on in Kazakhstan? Why does Kazakhstan have Tony Blair as an advisor? What's going on in Azerbaijan? What happened in the Sahel? Don't talk shit, Rory. Don't talk crap. Anyway, let's carry on. I honestly hate these people because everything they believe is a lie. Everything Rory Stewart believes is a lie. Rory Stewart, if the US turns towards isolationism, transactional extortion, and a great power cynicism, it would mean that the legacy of 80 years of alliance building was not about deterrence, order, and stability, but about coercion, opportunism, and betrayal. That's because it was. That's because all of those things are true. That's because every power has always, always been that. Only twats like you believe in this bullshit, Rory Stewart. Nobody else ever believed it. Okay? And it's about time, rather than doubling down on these delusions, that you woke up from them and you started thinking like a great power again, if you want to. Make this Europe that you're talking about, you're going to have to start thinking in the same sorts of terms as Trump and the same sorts of terms as Putin and wake the fuck up. Because nobody upon nobody is going to war for international rules-based order and humanitarianism. Rory Stewart. It would signal that the US commitments mean nothing, whether to NATO, Taiwan, or vulnerable nations in Africa and Asia. While all of that is true, Since when did US, since when has the US been committed to anything, Rory? Right? Don't forget. North Korea, job half done job in North Korea. Vietnam, weren't committed, pulled out. Right? Iraq, Afghanistan, weren't committed, pulled out. Right? Time and time again, the US just loses interest in shit, causes a mess and loses interest. Right? What about Libya? What about the, like, they killed Gaddafi and left a bloody vacuum in North Africa? A vacuum through which, by the way, millions upon millions of hordes from Africa have poured into Europe under your watch, Rory Stewart. It would embolden adversaries like Russia, China, and Iran. They were emboldened under your watch, Rory Stewart. Russia has been emboldened under your watch. China rose entirely under the auspices of NATO. Iran expanded its power after the fuckwit neocons created a war in Iraq and a war in Afghanistan and a war in Syria. And, you know, continually removed Arab strongmen for Shiite proxy powers from Iran to expand their influence in the region. All that happened under your watch, Rory Stewart, under the people that you support, Victoria Nuland. It would leave allies scrambling, forcing Europe, Japan and others to seek separate deals with rivals. The real tragedy would not just be Ukraine's fault, though that would be horrific. It would be the confirmation that the 80 years of peace based on development, alliances and mutual security have been deliberately and viciously ended. If Trump's vision is one where strength is wielded without principle, alliances are transactional and power serves only itself, then the US is not just withdrawing from the world, it is undermining the very rationale for its own global power. And not a minute too soon. You delusional cunt. I fucking hate this man. I really do. I thought this stream was going to be light-hearted, but it turns out being confronted with the rhetoric from twats like Rory Stewart has actually made me very angry, because it's reminded me of the people we've had to live under all these years and the mess they've created in country after country all over the world. I've lost the thread now. I'm going to relight my cigar and regroup a second. Lost my temper then. Excuse me, friends, I'm having a moment here. Right, let's get back to this. Fucking hell. Fucking Rory Stewart. Oh, I hate him. Not technically salt with too good to post. Yeah, that was a good one. Good shit post. Ankle lock on Zelensky. Great ankle lock by Trump there. Yeah, wear a suit. Yeah. David French, look at these guys brag about bullying an ally under fire. Pathetic, weak, shameful, says David French. Julia Hartley Brewer cheering on Zelensky. Bloody hell. President Zelensky is taking on both Trump and Vance in the Oval Office. He is the only leader who's visited Trump who is telling it like it is. He's got more balls than any other man who's ever been in that room. Slavia, Ukraini. She's another one. I hate her as well, Hartley Brewer, because she's one of those ones who pretends to have some like populist sympathies once in a while. But she always shows where her allegiances truly lie. And all is said and done. If together we are not able to put enough pressure on Russia, then how can we claim that we can defeat China? Says Karja Kallis. Eat your heart out, Klausowicz. Move over, Rommel. There's a new sheriff in town. And it's this deluded bitch right here. carry on. There's the Ukrainian foreign minister there, head in hands. Oh, it's just incredible. My great-grandfather and greatest generation didn't fight in World War II to see our country side with murderous thugs like Putin. This is a disgrace, says Mike Levin. Oh, here we go. Rowling. Latvia stands with Ukraine. Gary Kasparov. No, Trump has destroyed America in the eyes of the world. The Swedish Prime Minister. Sweden stands with Ukraine. Zelensky, thank you for support. Your support, Donald Tusk. Eric Swalwell, he of Chinese spy fame, of course. Absolute admiration for our president, Zelensky. The guy has balls. He went into the Oval Office and stood up to Russia's best negotiators. Ha ha, good one, Eric. That's a zinger. Elina Valtonen, Finland stands with the people. And the people's right to choose in Ukraine. People have chosen, we stand by Ukraine. Peter Pavel, we stand with Ukraine. So you see that they're not, you know, the current European elites are not letting this go. Deborah Meaden, could Trump be jealous of the admiration that Zelensky draws? That was a shocking interaction, and it looked like intentional bullying to me. Well, let me tell you where I am, Deborah. I'm out. Richard Dawkins. Among the least likable of human beings are bullies and those who toady to them. Trump and Putin's poodle manages to combine both. His arrogant bullying of Zelensky in the service of his bath-worthy toadying to the Russian bully. Nice one, Richard. I mean, I thought you were meant to get all the selfish gene stuff. What happened to you, Richard Dawkins? Andy Burnham. Guy who is thicker than mince. Thick as dog shit, Andy Burnham. Having watched that today, I can say only one thing. Let's all get behind Zelensky, you are. People who have countries haven't recently experienced the trauma of invasion should not bully or lecture those who have. Slavia, Ukraini. It's just relentless. Ed Davey. You know, Ed Davey now is taking he's taken a break from his slides and his theme parks and his ski resorts and his bungee jumping, right? Oh, because this shit is serious now, Ed, isn't it? This is thuggery from Trump and Vance, plain and simple. They are bullying the brave, true patriot Zelensky into accepting a deal which effectively hands victory to Russia. That's because Russia won, Ed. Unless the UK and Europe step up, we are facing the betrayal of Ukraine. James Cleverly, another Tory foreign minister. Even if the UK is the only country in the world supporting Ukraine, we should keep supporting them. They are on the front line of our defence. Our sons and daughters are fighting and dying for our freedom. Their sons and daughters are fighting and dying for our freedom. We should be thanking them. Now, how does that work, James? How did a Ukrainian dying in a pointless war against the Russians, you know, when the Molotov cocktail came over the wall and blew up the living room of some poor Ukrainian, how was that dying for my freedom? In what respect did that die? Like, you know, when you're tucking into your Chinese takeaway, watching your Premiership football slop tonight, what the hell has Ukraine got to do with that? Because that's your definition of freedom. You know, when the squat Albanian turns up with your Deliveroo tonight, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's for old Vlody who died for me in Ukraine. How? In what possible respect? It's just a lie, isn't it? It's just a lie. It's just a lie. UN EU foreign policy chief says the free world needs a new leader. Here we go. Oh, here we go. Giles Brandreth. I mean, if there's anything that sums up the entire British establishment, it's this dickhead here in his knitted Ukraine top. I might have to move. I might just move. Where can I go to, guys? Where can I go to that isn't gay? If the missus doesn't want to come, I'll have to just say, look, sorry, I can't stand living here anymore. You know, you guys can support Ukraine on your own. If you don't want to come with me, you know, I'll say AAA, look, I'll see you when you're older. You'll understand one day. Or maybe you won't, but what do we do with this? How can you get through to these people? When are they're not going to wake up. Look at the face of boomerdom right in front of you. They're never going to wake up. They're never going to wake up. Forget it. Right. Let me read some super chats and then we'll get out of here. Okay. Peter Bokan says, this is not the end of the American proxy war against Russia. Hegseth came to Europe to say, America is focusing on China. Europe has to deal with Russia on its own. See Brian Berletic's The EU-US Division of Labor video. This is all kayfabe within the deep state. Okay, I shall check that out. Sounds possibly true that there could be like a backroom deal here, but it's certainly the case that the Europeans are going to try to keep this going. That much is obvious. All that stuff we just reviewed, they're going to try to keep it going. Okay. Ike Brolovsky says, something happened. Slop. Where are they? I mean, we have been, we're in the actual dream moment, aren't we? I mean, that's literally me right now. This is like, this is manna from heaven, this stuff. Pierre says, you're hard on JD Vance, but given his actions over the past month, I'm increasingly convinced he watches your channel or someone advising him does. Well, I mean, Vance is very plugged in to alternative media. And it's very possible that Vance has even read my books, okay? But like I said before, unless old Peter wants to sling me a couple of million quid, I don't see why I shouldn't point out some of the dodgy things in his past, right? I mean, he has been putting in some good performances, but let's not forget, okay, if you want to win over people's trust, you have to like do stuff to make them trust you. And that is basically what is happening. There's a very interesting dynamic opening up over the question of Vance, I've noticed, which is that there's a lot of people on Twitter now who are on the kind of more MAGA side of things who've definitely got an agenda to try to get JD Vance over to try to like cement him in your mind as the natural successor in 2028, which is ultimately where this is probably headed. But there's also like another set of people. I'll just name them. Fuentes, Radfem, RFH, okay. Spencer, Pedro Gonzalez, and a few other people who really got a hate boner for JD Vance. Okay. RFH is hammer and tongs, right? They meme him into the ground. And so there's and Fuentes dislikes him as well. And they're doing this, like, I've noticed that Fuentes is doing this thing where he's praising Trump, but hammering Vance. Praising Trump, hammering Vance. That seems to be the new angle from those sorts of people. I'm watching that with interest. I have to say, I am not on the same page as all of those guys when it comes to this episode this week. And I'm still friendly with Dickie, as people know, but he and I do not see eye to eye on this issue. People have been saying, well, why don't you debate him and so on? I'm not interested in debates, guys. I don't do that. We just agree to disagree on this, okay? I mean, you can disagree on even a topic as big as this and still, like, be intellectually interested in each other, okay, as I'm sure we are, okay? There are lots of people I disagree with this issue on. Frody's another one. He's always been big for Ukraine here, and there are various other people. I just see this differently, and it comes down to my realist priors, okay? It comes down to the fact that I follow realism in all aspects, not just in elite theory, but in international relations too. Let's not forget, Machiavelli didn't just invent the elite theory kind of on the domestic front. He also invented realism on the international plane. That's why Mearsheimer has got a picture of himself as Machiavelli on his own website. And I follow realism in all aspects. In my view, the realist view of this conflict has always been more on the Russia side of things. Okay. That's not to say I'm in the tank for Russia, right? But it is like, as I explained on the stream last night, if I was the president of Ukraine, I would not have taken the actions that Zelensky did. I would have been thinking, how could I prevent the bloodshed of hundreds of thousands of my fellow citizens here, of my brothers and sisters? I don't know how Zelensky sleeps at night, because he led his country into a war that he couldn't win. That is the definition of foolish government, foolish leadership, stupid leadership. Chichilian wank is what I call it. Okay. Now, I know that other people have got a different view, that they think, oh, well, AA's proposal is just a cuck, right? It's not. It's like, if you're the leader of a small country next to a very large nation, your goal is to survive, okay? And the option of going all in 100% with NATO is not an option if you're Ukraine. I'm sorry, that's just the reality of it, right? Just like the Prime Minister of Britain doesn't have the option of being 100% anti-American in the current moment, okay? The reality is, if I was the Prime Minister, I couldn't just, like, throw Vicks up at the... I couldn't do the Notting Hill thing where I stand up to the American president and I'm like, rah, rah, I hate America. You could never do that. This is the definition of realism, right? Everybody understands that when it comes to the British Prime Minister. So why can't you understand, if you're the Ukrainian president, you have to have decent relations with the Russians? Otherwise, they're going to fuck you up. Anyway, let's carry on. Look, Bogus Slawa, I'm just saying that my way of doing things doesn't get hundreds of thousands of people killed. His way of doing things has got possibly over a million people killed on both sides. Bogoslawa says, I have my tobacco pipe lit and a mug of beer. The girlfriend cuddled up next to me with a glass of wine, both listening to this, cheering on my president. Well, if you're still watching, Boga, with your girlfriend, I'm sorry if I've disturbed your romantic evening, because I was a bit more fired up than I was thinking I would be on this stream. I could imagine your girlfriend being like, I'm not sure about this. He's a bit aggressive, isn't he? Sorry, I'm not always fired up like this, but Rory Stewart really did piss me off. And in fact, it's not often that we watch pure unadulterated regime media, and it's just like the level of delusion, you know, level of delusion. No Guard says, broke Zelensky is just like Churchill. Woke Zelensky is nothing like Churchill. Bespoke Zelensky is exactly like Churchill. Very good, No Guard. Very good. I like that. Sensium Comedium says, and overnight the Democrats became patriots and started to defend the Constitution. I have to play. I'm going to play this again. I'm going to play this again. Where is he? Where's the? Where is he?
And this motherfucker talks about him wearing a suit. I hate this fucking country. I've never in my life felt like I do right now. This man has been respectful to every leader in the world. Everybody. And you clowns want to fucking do that shit to him when he comes over here. You fucking disgraceful son of a bitches. Man, I just want to be next to Zelensky right now. God damn, man, I can't.
I want to be next to him right now. That might have to be one for the age. I might actually stick that on my permanent. That might have to go along with...
College kids today really seem to hate Jews.
It's over.
Up yours, woke moralists. We'll see who cancels who.
I've never seen so many white people in one place. It's an extraordinary story.
It's over.
I think we've reached peak wank.
I think that has to join the pantheon. That is so good. That's going to join my permanent panel here. It's just incredible. I wish I could be next to him right now. PS says, Zelensky's behavior made my blood boil. The calls from the US right to rug pull the Ukrainian army and laugh at it. Pull Starlink, pull ISR, brick radios, brick software, normalize relations with the Russian, laugh at the results in the Euro horror. Well, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm really not, but you know, the strength of the reaction has been quite something as well, as we've seen. Vivek the poet says, thoughts on the possibility that with Trump signaling at the withdrawal of the US presence and is operating on a different agenda, that the game may try to decouple from America and reposition itself in Europe and or the UK. Yes, I think they're going for it. I think they're doing exactly that. And I think Starmer fancies himself as the guy to lead the world into this. And as I said from Rory Stewart, the plan is to use the Poles and the Turks as the cannon fodder this time. Anarcho Republican says, I've been riding the tiger in the Venezuelan jungle, but this is so good it's worth coming back to the slop sewer. I have to say that Mr. Trump reminds me a bit of Hugo Chavez here, a masculine character scolding a misbehaved child on live TV is gold. I mean, it's quite brilliant. It really is quite brilliant. Art Dino says, "Does and I tell you what, I honestly don't like, I've been critical of Trump for various different things. I almost don't care anymore because this has just been so good. Right, it's got like, where's that Al Pacino? You know, the Al Pacino gif? Just when I thought I was out, they pull me right back. And this is, I mean, I tell you, I've been a sucker for this. I really have. This has been like one of the best couple of days I can remember, you know, ever since I started this channel, really. Art Dino says, does this phenomena prove that most people's sense of self is quite weak? This seems that even more likely, the more educated the person. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Dutton has talked about this and various others, that if you're like 115, 120 IQ, something like that, 125 IQ, you're actually more likely to go along with the prevailing social winds because you sniff the air. And you're, especially if you're a woman, but also if you're male as well, you get caught up in a kind of, you know, in what is socially acceptable. And the only people who kind of go against that, you know, you go right up into the IQ, not saying I've got a higher IQ, but I do. You know, mine's 147, as I've mentioned before. Took that test when I was 12, never doing it again. But, you know, if you're right up there, you're prepared to go against the crowd, okay? Or if you're right down there, that meme of the midwit is true. If you're right down there, you see the world in a different way. Right, I'm talking about like tradies, mechanics. You know, I'm not saying they're all low IQ. I'm just saying that if they sat down and did an IQ test, they may not do that well. You know, their skills are in different areas or whatever, or they're more practical people, or they're not like book smart, but they're street smart. Those sorts of people you know, have got a tendency to see through bullshit, right? This is why the commies hated the actual peasantry, right? The actual real working class have always been salt of the earth because they get it. They understand, because they have to, because in their world, if you bullshit, it means that something doesn't get done, right? If your job is fixing cars, you can't bullshit about it. Otherwise, the car doesn't get fixed. It doesn't work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of truth to that. And it's one of those things that people have commented on. In Spengler says that the peasantry always unnaturally gravitate towards the lions. They naturally gravitate towards, a kind of more conservative nationalist way of doing things, whereas the intelligentsia, so-called, the middle class, always tend towards the fox way of doing things, you know. All right, let's carry on. Mr. EW 1985 says these journalists unleash the worst of me. Yeah, me too. And unfortunately, I was expecting just to have a laugh tonight. It actually had the opposite effect and got me riled up in a way that I wasn't expecting. So, you know, if you were expecting a peaceful or fun evening, apologies if I've, been a little bit more unleashed than usual tonight. Utis 4321 says, my parents' generation associated a British accent with sophistication. Thanks to watching hours of British media, that accent inspires in me a sense that the person speaking has an IQ of about 20. Well, as I was just talking, they've probably got an IQ of about exactly 115. And it's funny that I seem to remember that J.D. Vance and Rory Stewart actually had an argument about IQ, which was exactly about this point. Cole Caffran says, these people think legal power matters. It doesn't, because power is always de facto international law, has always been a post hoc excuse for American power. Absolutely correct, 100%. I agree with that. Jacob Lowe says, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. Chris H says, just showing some appreciation for the Saturday stream to cover this hysteria. Thanks a lot, Chris. Maybe this double 1-2 punch that I did this weekend, the last stream and this stream, may go down in the annals. It's certainly memorable to me. Chris Primer says, Putla and Chito Benito are steamrolling Europe and Western values. Democracy dies in darkness. Cringe Walker says, Trump has somehow managed to become both Chamberlain and Mustache Man at the same time. Turnip, very astute comment from Turnip there. Fireburn says, why do these people just ignore the Ukrainian state conscription of the unwilling soldiers? For all the talk about freedom and the will of the people, where is the acknowledgement of this basic friction? Yes, indeed, Fireburn. And also, James Burnham reminds us that in World War II, for all the talk about Churchill and our boys and so on, they had to resort to the draft too, didn't they? At a time of mass unemployment. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Jake from State says, I have to catch up with the stream, but the crash outs have been great. God bless the USA. Boggs says, I think they were giving him a way out. Boggs also says, he will be another Saddam. Narco Republican says, this is a prime example of masculine versus feminine politics. Yes, my video later this week on the great man, the return of the great man, is very much about this topic. And I talked a little bit about it last night as well. Getting things done versus screeching and hoping a sort of group therapy will sort things out. The age of great men politics is back. Yes, Narco Republican. Yes. And this is one of the most annoying things. Let's just sit around and have a meeting. Right, and us discussing it will magically sort out the issue, right? Back when I was talking about the Australian Prime Minister and sorting out the bullying, having a meeting about the bullying doesn't actually sort out the bullying, does it? Spaghetto says, as an outsider, it seems to me that the Brit elite are sacrificing everything to preserve a prestige that nobody else thinks they've had since World War II. I know, it's an utter delusion. It's an utter, utter delusion. And I don't know why they persevere in it. But clearly, it's not a delusion if they can get all of the other elites to go along with it, right? And as we saw, Ursula von der Leyen, the Australian Prime Minister, Emmanuel Macron, all of these guys are still on the same page. And so as long as they're on the same page, this kind of quote-unquote prestige kind of exists, but it's an illusion. It's based on nothing. It has nothing behind it. It has no material behind it. It has no wealth behind it. It has no military might behind it. And it's up to the great men, the Russias, the Chinas, and now Trump, to puncture that so that everybody can see that the emperor has no clothes. $11 Cheese says, AA, did you see George Galloway slap Piers Morgan around? Morgan is the patron saint of these shallow media types. Galloway brought up Yankovic, and Piers brought the guillotine down, saying, Putin, Putin. I didn't see that, but it sounds good. Let me have a look at that. Galloway. If it's not too long, I might watch a clip of it before we get out of here. Morgan. Galloway, Morgan. Disturbing. Here we go. It's only four. Is this it? Okay, I'll download this now as we're moving through the super chats. It looks good. I want to cover it before I get out of here. And then I'm gonna have to go. I have to drive back and see my family. I'll be like, hey, where have you been then? Oh, only ranting on two epic streams. How are things? How's your mother? Joshua Dugay says, I think a lot of the foolishness of Western politicians stems from their inability to grapple with their loss of escalation dominance. They seem incapable of accepting the new reality. Absolutely, I agree with that. They just cannot change the calculus. They cannot adjust to the new multipolar moment. Dr. Metropolis says, US isn't a global enforcer anymore. It is securing its own region. The canal, buying Greenland, Project Stargate, the gay is over. Well, yes, in theory, but it seems like our European friends and our Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, have got other ideas. Whether they can actually pull this off is another question. I would suspect they can't. And in the process of trying, they may trigger World War III, which is something I'm quite worried about. Boggs says, what do you think of the King meeting Trump at Balmoral and now Zelensky? I don't really know much. I don't really think that the King is that significant. I would say that a diplomatic incident between King Charles and Trump would be something wild. But I suspect that everybody will be on their best behavior. Those sorts of events, nothing ever happens. I mean, you know, one of my frustrations with some American commentators and some like schizo types is that they always want to make the royal family like a kind of live part of all of these things. I've never believed that the royal family is significant in any way when it comes to politics. They're just kind of, it's just like a little diplomatic tool that they can that the British state can reel out when they need it. Stumbling says, hello, AA. I have been reading Go Free by Jason Cohn, where he lays how to challenge the anti-white rhetoric with careful language, avoiding using their terms. Have you or would you consider producing anything familiar for tackling the Boomer Truth regime? Well, once I figured out how to do that myself, maybe. I mean, there's a few things that I know I'm not going to get into in the book. I don't want to touch revisionism of any sort. I don't want to go down the route of talking about the actual history, because boomers especially feel like they're on familiar and safe ground there. And if you start touching those sacred cows, they're just going to tense up. They're just going to, you have to, in a strange way, go around the houses with Boomer Truth, right? If you watch my original Boomer Truth series, I managed to make all of those videos with barely discussing World War II at all, right? I was doing things like breaking down raggy dolls, you know? This is a kind of deconstructive method. It's actually using postmodern tools back against the regime that these people have made. Morbali says, the best book for the Marshall Plan. Yeah, that book, Jellick, Exporting the American Model, is the best book on the Marshall Plan. Two, I'll need to teach Shakespeare's Julius Caesar soon. Apart from taking your fantastic course, which I will do soon, could you recommend a book to prepare me for this task? I would say the first port of call, Borbali, would be finding the blue New Cambridge edition of Julius Caesar and reading the introduction from that. Make sure it's the one from the 80s or the early 90s, not the very newest Cambridge edition, but the one from the 80s or the 90s, and then follow up on the bibliography of that introduction. And that will be the best stuff on Julius Caesar. Okay, I think that will suffice. Let's, before we get out of here, have a look at this George Galloway showdown with Boomer Piers Morgan, shall we? Where is that? Here we go.
Come to something when, having spent a lifetime myself fighting against NATO and American wars, it's the Americans that are trying to stop the war, and Piers Morgan, Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer who are trying to keep it going.
I don't want to keep you've it got going. A lot of Ukrainian, I don't want to keep it going.
You've got a lot of Ukrainian blood on your hands.
Yes.
You have lied about this war from the beginning.
Yes.
Vladimir.
You have lied about the origin of this war.
Yes.
About the duration of this war.
Yes.
About the course of this war. And now, having caused you and your war party the death of a million Ukrainians while claiming to love Ukrainians, you're now calling for British lives to be lost.
What a load of absolute bullshit.
That constitutes close to a war crime. You're going to regret it when very soon Zelensky is sitting in a beachfront villa somewhere counting his ill-gotten gains, and all the secrets of the rampant corruption between the Democrats and the Zelensky regime begin to tumble out of the cupboard. This war did not begin 3 years ago. You very well know that it began in 2014. You very well know that it began with a coup against the elected president of Ukraine, backed by Victoria Nuland and the administration at that time. And
straight fire, straight facts, based Galloway.
Supported by you. You very well know that the criminalization...
It's going to happen, friends. Me and Aaron Ice Cream. I'm going to get in there with the commies, I'm telling you. It's inevitable. Us lot and them lot are going to get together at some point. When it happens, I don't know.
...of the Russian language, which followed hard on the heels of that coup, was the proximate reason for an uprising in the east of the country amongst Russian-speaking, ethnically Russian people. You very well know.
How am I going to get in there with Galloway? Maybe I'll just pretend, like I'll lean into my Iranian side and I'll be like, hey, George, listen, salam alaikum. Salam alaikum. Is that what they say? You know, maybe he loved that. Maybe Galloway, I mean, maybe that's the way in with these people. But I don't know. There has to be a way to make that. That has to happen somehow, in my opinion, because that would be the thing that would galvanize, that would produce something that, because in this country is more left than America, right? It's more leftish. And the left are powerful in Britain. There has to be a way that we can get the more based leftists and us together. That is something that's going to happen in the next couple of years. How it's going to happen, I don't know, but it will. It will happen, mark my words. There's going to be an Aaron Ice Cream, Carl Benjamin double team at some point, or me and Aaron, or somebody. It's going to happen.
That Zelensky and his predecessor rained down shot and shell on the people of East Ukraine for 8 years before Putin intervened in 2022, and that 14,000...
How else could I get Galloway in? Maybe rather than go in the Iranian route, I could go the Welsh way. All right, but all right, George. Oh, I hate the English as well, mate. Maybe I could go that way. You know, there's a way. I'm telling you, there's a way.
1,000 people, most of them women and children, were killed in that onslaught. You very well know that Zelensky was preparing for a final onslaught, a final solution. And what?
Oh, I hate what Thatcher did to the mines. I was with you. I love Arthur Scargill. There's a way in, I'm telling you.
Well, I'm on that subject. You're always telling us how much you love the Jews. You're supporting a regime which puts up statues to Nazi collaborators, to generals of the Galician division of the SS. You
Zelensky
are supporting
is Jewish,
a regime,
you know that, right? You know Zelensky's Jewish, right? Do you?
But that's like saying there's no racism in America because Obama.
So you're calling the Jewish leader of Ukraine a Nazi. Listen, is that your position?
That's like saying there's no racism in America.
Oh, God. It always goes back to boomer truth, doesn't it?
America, because Obama was briefly the president of the country. The entire western part of Ukraine played a decisive role in the mass murder of Jews and Poles and others in the Second World War. And now they are heroizing the heroes of the SS. Why doesn't Donald Trump agree with you?
Because he's wrong.
Well, you know, you have been up his ass all of these two decades. You've kissed his feet.
Really?
You've licked his boots. Mm. You've fawned upon him.
Really?
You have been his super fan. And
look at this guy in the second column. They can't hold it together, these people.
Now, on this fundamental question of our age, he's entirely wrong. Everybody watching knows you are Trump's biggest ass.
I like
kisser.
Him.
Everybody
I like
watching.
I like
knows
Donald
that.
Trump.
I know you like him.
I like him. And on
you
many
like
things,
him.
On many
but
things,
on this,
I like him.
On
and
the
on many things.
Fundamental question.
Let me finish.
The biggest question
in
politics in the world today, he's got it completely wrong.
No, it's a little expendable.
Ukraine was the most corrupt country.
Well, more
in
corrupt
Europe
than Russia.
It was designated by the Economist.
What about Putin?
By the FT.
What about Putin?
By everyone who knows
about
these things. I'll tell you what, your mate, Donald Trump, is going to open every book, every drawer, every filing cabinet, and you're going to be embarrassed.
Well, it was all a bit boomery, let's be honest, but it's all good fun. Typical Piers Morgan slop, really, but... All right. Okay. Thank you very much for watching, ladies and gentlemen. I think that'll do. Pick up a course. Foundations of Shakespeare, like I said. Trivium, ladies and gentlemen, the biggest seller there. Thousands of people have done it. You know, take a course before your Starmer enlists you to sign up, you know, before you're drafted. Yeah. Maybe learning some logic may help you, in the trenches there in Ukraine. All right. Cheers, guys. Have a good weekend.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.